Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Nice to have Ryan with us this morning.
Hey. Hello. Good morning.
Schwani taking the day off. Did I hear correctly that he is hustling up what used to be the Hancock?
He is not. Do you think that would be something he would do?
Could you have said that any more resolutely, Andy?
Yes, I probably could have. But
actually, rumor has it he's on the slopes this weekend.
On the slopes, you
yeah,
say?
Yeah, I heard he's doing some skiing.
Really?
Actually, he was negotiating with the Cubs to get Cody Bellinger back, and it was successful, so it seems.
He's been very busy this weekend.
He's everywhere, though. Yeah. Schwani's everywhere.
He got Patrick Kane back to the United Center.
Yes.
He got Chris Chelios' jersey retired.
Right.
Didn't he organize the farewell party for Tom Skilling?
Oh, that's right.
At the Music Box. That was all
that,
him, right?
Yeah. And won a SAG Award last night, interestingly.
He's everywhere. He's amazing.
I
wonder he needs a day off.
Yeah, nice to have Ryan in here with us. Speaking of the whole Chelios thing, we're going to be broadcasting all that?
Yeah, well, there's going to be a live remote from a bar on the west side with Joe Brand and Kevin Powell before the game at 2.
Joe Brand and Kevin Powell at a bar. What could go wrong
with
that?
Nothing could go wrong at all. They will...
Jack, are you going to be at that bar also? Our producer, Jack?
Is he going to be there?
Yeah. I will.
Oh,
I got to run
man.
Over.
Now we're in deep trouble.
I don't know how that got passed, but...
I don't either. How come I didn't get invited?
The big three will be there.
Jack's all dressed up today. Jack actually has, I don't think I've ever seen Jack not wearing a hoodie and backwards baseball cap. Today, shirt and tie.
Wow.
It's a big day.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to come in there and check this out.
Shows you where we rate.
No comment.
So what were you saying, Andy? So they're going to be getting drunk.
Right, and the ceremony is going to take place at around 3:10 from what the Blackhawks say. They say if you're going to be at the game, to make sure you're in your seats by 3.
Okay.
And then the actual pregame show with Joe, the official Blackhawks pregame show, begins at 4:30, and the 5 o'clock faceoff as the Hawks take on the dreaded Red Wings of Detroit, featuring number 88, Patrick Kane.
One Mr. P. Kane.
And Alex DeBrincat. We're all kind of forgetting that Alex DeBrincat's coming back tonight, too.
Did I hear that Michael Jordan may be at all the festivities today?
So there was a lot of rumors.
I don't know if you know, he used to play at the United Center also.
Yeah, there were a lot of rumors about that because he played for the Bulls right alongside Chelios playing for the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
And they were buds.
Was he any good playing basketball?
He was fair. You know, there were people that said that he wouldn't really amount to much, and, you know, he had a hard time shaking out of that.
Yeah, really, the only way I know him is that his son is dating Scottie Pippen's daughter, or wife, or ex-girlfriend, or whatever it was.
Yeah, but I don't believe that Michael's going to be there today.
Do you think they changed the locks on him? Do you think he can still get in?
His fast card doesn't work anymore.
Listen, man, I've got this card that I can get in anywhere.
Imagine that. Michael Jordan shows up and they don't let him in.
Oh, I think all he's got to do is flash one of those 6 rings he's got, and I think he's in.
That's automatic entry.
Yeah.
So wait, you said he's not going to be there?
I don't believe he's going to be there. There was a lot of rumors that he was, but I do not believe that.
Is he pals with Chelios?
He is pals with Chelios, yeah. They go way back to their playing days. And I'm sure he was invited, but I don't know if he'll be there.
Hmm.
It would have been cool.
Does he know that Jack got all dressed up?
That might be the reason he's not showing up.
You think that's it?
Yeah.
That's fair.
He doesn't want to run in with Jack?
Well, he doesn't want to be shown up by, you know,
as we're
Jack.
Now calling him, by the way, we got a new nickname for Jack as of last week, because the paparazzi was all over Skilling last week.
Yes, they were.
During the show. You included,
I was
in
there. I know.
You were like big-time fanboying Tom Skilling
last
week.
You're right.
And producer Jack, was getting in the way and keeping order here. So I'm calling him Jack Hammer from now on.
Nice. Running some interference, Jack. I like
running
it.
Running the interference. Yes. The Jack Hammer, everyone. Yes.
I like that.
Yeah, be looking for that. All right, let's get things going here in just a minute. We've got a big show I'll tell you all about coming up in just one moment. Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, of course, who sort of are going to be on the show today. There's a new production of Jersey Boys that will be opening at the Mercury Theater on North Southport And we've got the whole cast. We've got all four of the Jersey Boys who are going to be in with us later on. They are going to perform live for us here this morning. You know where I saw the Jersey Boys marquee when I was over at the Music Box Theater on Thursday for the big Tom Skilling Palooza that went on there at on the WGN TV morning news. But that was that's just part of you know, the Skilling celebration, celebrating Skilling, as we're calling it.
It's been a month long.
He was here for 2 hours. I'm glad we got him last week.
He was great.
He's amazing. He's an amazing, amazing person. But I was so happy that we got to sit down, talk with him for a couple of hours. Because now, you know, now he went on the midday news. Of course, he's on the evening news anyway. And then he came on the morning show for the big special program with a studio, you know, a theater full of people, like 500 people lined up starting at 6 o'clock in the morning on Thursday morning to be part of this audience for Tom.
Did you see him shaking and talking to, shaking the hands and talking to everyone who was out in front?
Yeah.
They actually had to kind of push him in, like, Tom, we got to get going on this thing.
The people from the station were, you know, normally they have to hold the public back. Here they had to, like, pull Tom through because he was stopping and talking to every single person.
Yep.
That's our Tommy. Tommy, that's what he does. And this coming, is it 28th Thursday?
I think it's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
28th will be Tom's final night on the air. So, you know, it's I can't even imagine how he's going to react. He's going to be a mess.
You know, it's funny because I saw him Friday night. I was filling in on GN Sports, and we come on right after the 10 o'clock news. And I said, "Hey, so I'm not gonna see you before for the big day." And all he kept saying is, "I'm not going anywhere. I'll see you again. I'll see you around." I'm like, "Okay, well, it's not gonna be the same, obviously, because you're not gonna be on every night,
right?
But he'll be involved, I'm sure."
Right. He's amazing. The that whole experience on Thursday morning was amazing. The whole experience here was amazing. That, you know, people I didn't even know were in this building on Sunday morning.
Yes.
Everybody showed up.
I know.
Everybody came out the studio. Everybody took pictures. Tom is telling stories about growing up in Aurora, you know, telling people stories off the air. You know, and we're trying to, you know, get him back in his seat so we could talk to him on the air. He's just an absolutely amazing guy.
You know, some of the other great things that they've been doing over at the big Channel 9, the people that are making appearances, there was one the other day with all of his interns.
Right.
His former interns were talking about what Tom meant to them, and there's newscasters and weather people all over town that have
from other stations that we've been running. They, you know, we've asked people if they wanted to send messages, and everybody did send messages over. And we've been running those. Joey Deoria,
who
played Bozo, he sent a message from where he lives now in Idaho. And who else? Bonnie Hunt sent some.
Ginger Z, I saw.
Ginger Z.
Good Morning America.
I'm
Valparaiso
telling
University grad.
People in the weather business worship Tom. I mean, I think in a way we all sort of,
of course,
worship Tom Skilling. But if you're in the weather business, you realize... We're talking about Michael Jordan a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
that he is the Michael Jordan of meteorologists. Or as Demetrius Ivory said, who is going to become the chief meteorologist when Tom retires, said that Michael Jordan is the Tom Skilling of basketball players.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Because, you know, hey, he's been doing it for 45 years and is completely beloved.
You know, what's really interesting, we were looking at the forecast coming up for Tuesday. You know, it's supposed to be like 70 on Tuesday, and there's a chance for severe thunderstorms. That's the second to last day going out with a bang. A little severe weather coverage.
Wall-to-wall Skilling coverage on his last day. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, not that I want a blizzard.
No, me neither. But
how fitting would that be, though? On Tom's last day, we get 30 inches of snow or something like
that. Or something happens.
Right. And or it'll happen. You know what it'll happen? It'll happen on Demetrius's first day.
Oh, there you go.
Because Tom has, as I have said for decades and decades, Tom doesn't just forecast the weather. He actually creates it somehow.
I don't know how he does it, but you're right.
But when he goes on vacation, have you noticed? Anytime he goes on vacation, we get tornadoes, blizzards, ridiculous heat, something. It's something that gets dumped into Demetrius's lap.
How's Demetrius holding up?
He's doing fantastic. I think it's a little overwhelming.
I can imagine.
He hasn't said, but how would you feel if you're stepping into the shoes of Tom Skilling?
Those are big, big shoes.
Right?
Yeah. You know, the hardest thing, too, is this happens for broadcasters, too, especially play-by-play. When you go into a booth after someone's been there forever, you try not to be them. You try to just be yourself because it's hard enough to be yourself, let alone try to imitate the other guy.
Right.
And I'm sure Demetrius is just going to be his own guy. He has been for 12 years there.
Of course he has. Yeah. Demetrius, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, I'm a little worried about what this is going to do to me going places and pretending that I'm Tom Skilling for free drinks.
Well, now it's even going to be better because he's not going to be around every day. So it'll be like a real sighting.
So I have him off my shoulders, in other words.
Jack, be ready to run some interference.
Uh-huh. I don't have Skilling.
Get the hammer.
Get in my way. Yeah.
The hammer's always ready.
I'd love a pina colada. Thanks. That'd be fantastic. Thanks, guys. How are you?
But you know you make it when Tom Skilling has now his own beer. Did you see this? The Tom freaking Skilling beer.
It's awesome.
At Hot Butcher for the World. Thinking about swinging by and grabbing some of that.
Did you have some? Yet?
I have not yet. Oh,
I have not. It's an IPA. I don't like the IPAs that much, but I think just to have the can would be nice to have it.
Yeah. It's got a brewery decided to honor Tom.
That's awesome.
Genius marketing move on their part, I might add also, by the way. But, it's just nothing but great honor after honor. It was declared Tom Skilling Day by the mayor last week. Mm. It was declared Tom Skilling Day by the governor last week. And I believe, if I read correctly, that Tom somehow won the South Carolina primary last night also.
Without much campaigning.
I don't understand that, but that's the popularity of a Tom Skilling.
In all seriousness, do you think he has any idea what an impact he had on the city of Chicago for the last 40-plus years? David, do you think he has any idea?
Yeah, but he's too humble to acknowledge it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't mean to say that he sloughs it off.
Right.
I think he knows that he's a big deal and that he would just rather look at weather maps.
It's true.
I'm going to miss him. By the way, that did not stop me from, you know, remember, I guess a couple of years ago now, because if people always tell me that I either look like Billy Joel or Tom Skilling, I get that all the time. So a couple of years ago, when Billy Joel was at Wrigley Field, we went out there and I pretended like I was Billy Joel to fool people, to see how many people we could fool. And we did quite a few fool them. And so we did the same thing recently where I went out and pretended to be Tom Skilling. And people were completely fooled. Not completely. There were a few people that go, "You're not Tom Skilling. You're Dean Richards." But a lot of people were like, "Tom, thank you for all the years." We'll play a little of that for you coming up a little bit later on. Today, I'm going to be Dave Schwann, and I've got a far-flung forecast.
Nice.
When we come right back. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and figures. Andy, do you have your protractor?
Yeah, I have my compass and my protractor and my newfangled device.
And that's what you need. You're not allowed. If you don't have all three of those things, turn your radios off immediately. You must have those in order. As Dave Schwann will tell you every week, you must have those things in order to fully enjoy the far-flung forecast. And today we take you to Miami Beach, Florida. Maybe some of you have heard of it. Miami Beach, Florida is where one of the most famous and controversial boxing matches took place in sports history. Hmm. Sports Illustrated. You're surprised I'm doing something from sports.
I am. It's good.
Yeah, everybody is like, "What? Let's listen to him screw this up." It's one of the most controversial and some would say one of the most famous fights in sports history when 22-year-old then Cassius Clay took on Sonny Liston for the heavyweight championship of the world. And everybody expected Liston to just mop up this young Muhammad Ali, who is mostly famous for his fast talking. They called him the Louisville Lip, right?
Yep.
He had won the every time Andy says that, it's like, wow.
Floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee.
Dean actually did some research into
like this. This is good. You want to do the 10 o'clock sports too?
Don't push it. Cassius Clay was the light heavyweight gold medal winner at the 1960 Olympics in Rome. But nobody thought he could beat Sonny Liston. The L.A. Times had written, "The only thing at which Clay can beat Liston is reading the dictionary," because he was such a wordsmith. The New York Times declined covering the fight. They didn't even cover it because they thought it was going to be such a mismatched fight. But it turns out that in seven rounds. Okay, there's the real Dean coming out here. seven innings, seven periods, seven rounds.
Seven something.
Cassius Clay had defeated Sonny Liston. Liston didn't come out. He went to his corner completely beaten, and they, pretty much stopped the fight. And proclaiming then Cassius Clay the champion.
Now, I'm the greatest thing that ever lived.
Now, hold it. Move over, Joe. Get on.
I don't have a mark on my face.
Hold it. Bedlam busting out.
So great, I don't have a mark on my face.
Yeah.
And I upset Sonny Liston, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest.
Now,
I told the world, I talk to God every day. If God's with me, can't nobody be against me, Sonny. I shook up the world. I know the real God.
Cassius, wait a minute, Cassius.
Yes.
Let me ask you this now. You told me when you visited in Los Angeles, you could do it in 8. Well, you thought Sonny and figured Sonny was great. You did it in 6 or 7? You did it in 7.
I had him going in 8. I was getting ready to take him in the 8th, as you can see. But the man stopped it just to keep from making me look so great.
Right. I say now, give
Cassius Clay, with his usual humility back in the day. And that was the fight, Andy, where he coined the phrase, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Sting like a bee.
Yep.
That was all in 1964, 60 years ago today, in Miami Beach, Florida, where it is sunny and 59 degrees right now. Looks like a great Sunday morning. Some nice weather coming up. We'll update it all for you in a few minutes. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, we go to Dr. Jeremy Silver, who's medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, for the Week in Health. Dr. Silver, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us again. Let me push the button so we can actually hear Dr. Silver this time. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Dean, how you doing?
Doing very, very well. So as you may or may not know, when I'm, when I have some downtime, I like to sit and read, the latest information from the Centers for Disease Control. And they had a very interesting article that came out this week about the HPV vaccine and the positive impact that it is apparently having. First, explain what it is, and then explain what this new update is.
Yeah, so HPV, human papillomavirus, is a virus that affects humans. And let me just say before I continue that this conversation is going to relate to topics that may not be appropriate for youngsters. So I caution parents if young folks are listening. But it's a virus that affects primarily people of reproductive age because it is passed through sexual contact, both genitalia to genitalia and also genitalia to oral cavity. And it can lead to cancer. And that's sort of the big talking point here is that it's not just you know, a sexually transmitted infection potentially, but also when it does infect the body, it can transform the cells and cause them to develop cancerous mutations. And so there's a vaccine that's available, routinely available for kids. It can start as young as 9, and it has significant effect. We've seen reductions in cancer in women of childbearing age of up to 80%,
which is an enormous
reduction.
That's enormous.
It's enormous. So yeah. It's unusual to have a vaccine that's that effective. Might I say another vaccine of similar effectiveness would be the measles vaccine. So just a plug there for vaccines in general. Basically it's available all the way up until 45 years old, and then it seems to have less impact, and I don't believe it's offered after that.
Yeah.
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I'm glad that you gave the preface that if you've got small children around, you may, want to use some parental discretion there. But I think this information is so important when you have such a huge drop by 88% among teenage girls and 81% among young adult women, I think parents need to know that. Adults need to know that in order to protect their kids. I mean, if you want to shield your kids and, bury your head in the sand when it comes to important information like that, I guess that's up to you. But I think for most people, it's very important to know that this HPV vaccine that was introduced in 2006 is incredibly effective, it seems.
Yeah, and I would just say, for those with vaccine hesitancy, or for those who may have a legitimate concern about the vaccine side effects, it's always, you always have to look at the risk of the disease versus the risk of the cure. And if the risk of the disease is greater than the risk of the cure, then typically you recommend the cure. And in this case, while some people can have allergic reactions to vaccines, and rare autoimmune events, they are vanishingly low. It's not to say they don't happen. They do. But the risk of developing cancer from HPV is significantly higher. So to me, a no-brainer.
Yep, absolutely. So if anyone is going to talk to their own doctors about this, is it young girls, teenage girls, and young adult women who are most affected by this?
It is, although it's available to everybody, and so would recommend that if you have a youngster, talk to their pediatrician or primary care doctor. The schedule is, like every other vaccine schedule, it's complicated. I don't think any of us commits these to memory, but they're readily available online, and, of course, on the CDC website.
Yeah, it does affect men as well, but be aware of that. That's quite the finding. One thing I wanted to ask you about this that came up this week, the former talk show host Wendy Williams, who is the subject of a documentary right now, released information that she is living with frontal temporal dementia aphasia, which is similar to what Bruce Willis has, apparently. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, first of all, my heart goes out to anybody who's suffering with this disease. It's a horrible disease. It strikes down folks in the prime of life, and is just incredibly debilitating. So frontotemporal dementia, and that the name of the disease is descriptive. It describes where in the brain the disease has its impact, and that's in the frontal lobes, where your personality exists and your executive function, meaning that all of your task generation comes from that area. And then the temporal lobes, where you have emotions and some other behaviors. So it really destroys the personality. There's a couple of different variants, but the bottom line is that it's a challenge right now because the cause is unknown. We think it's probably genetic. So those with family history are at higher risk, but it it starts to impact people in behavioral ways. You can have personality changes and deterioration in hygiene and socially inappropriate behavior. And it's just from there, it just totally degenerates. So it's really just an awful disease and no known cure at this point.
The word in that whole diagnosis there that I think most people recognize is dementia. Similar kinds of symptoms for this as people suffering other forms of dementia?
Correct. Yeah. So it starts with more of a behavioral component typically. So if you were to ask, well, how would I know? If someone that you normally interact with is completely normal and then starts to display bizarre behavior or become unhinged in scenarios where they normally wouldn't, lack of self-awareness or just something feels different, that's a good indication that you might want to talk to your doctor just in general. Of course, there's so many different things that can lead to behavioral changes, but that's the numero uno. And they can often start out subtly, so people just kind of maybe blow it off or put it to the back of mind until it becomes more of an obvious thing.
Yeah, you mentioned that this often strikes at a fairly early age. Wendy Williams is 59. I got to think that Bruce Willis is somewhere around there, give or take a couple of years. Does that seem about normal, a normal age for something like this to happen, mid-50s to mid-60s, say?
Yeah, prime of life. So 40 to 65 is the range in which symptoms typically begin to come to the forefront. So yeah, both Wendy and Bruce Willis, I think, fit within that range.
Yeah, is this something you? I think you had said that it could be hereditary because the 815 area code just dropped a note saying my maternal grandmother and one of my first cousins on my mother's side both had it and died young. Is this something that people should be concerned with if they have family members who have had it?
That's a tough one. Thanks for that excellent question from the caller. You have a very interesting philosophical question that arises, which is, if you could test for the gene, do you want to know? So it's because there's no cure, that I guess it could be a weight hanging over you in either way. But my suggestion for that person is maybe to see a genetic counselor. Because the field of genetics is moving at the speed of light, there may be tests that become available that aren't available today that become available tomorrow that can help risk stratify and just help you plan. So certainly something that could be important for that caller.
Yeah, that's something for everyone to think about a little bit, whether it's dementia or, whatever it is. Would you want to know? What would you do? I've talked to so many people in all the shows that we've done on cancer, on breast cancer, on Alzheimer's, on the forms of dementia, people who are diagnosed, and they wanted to know. They wanted to live every single minute as fully as they possibly could. And I think probably I fall into that category as well, but I guess everybody would be different, I'm sure. You in treating patients must, see reactions of all kinds.
It's true. And some folks may want to just live their lives as if there was a shot clock when maybe there wasn't. So it's just different strokes for different folks. But these hereditary diseases without a cure in which frontotemporal dementia fits, just really challenging. And the hope is, with ongoing research that, in the next 6 months, somebody comes out and says, hey, I think I figured this one out.
Yeah. Several people texted in and said that Bruce Willis is 68 years old, so that falls right into the range that you are talking about. This is Dr. Jeremy Silver on with us from Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, the medical director of emergency medicine, who answers your questions and our questions. 312-981-7200. If you've got a comment, if you've got a question for Dr. Silver, we're coming to you next. Dean Richards Sunday Morning on WGN with Dr. Jeremy Silver. The Week in Health, 312-981-7200. It's our phone number if you've got questions. The 773 area code says, Dean, whether you're healthy or not, it's best to live your life fully every day. Boy, that's the truth. I had said that, you know, that if you knew that you had something, that I would want to know so I could, you know, live every day fully. But that's an excellent point that you make. You should do that whether you're healthy or not healthy. Doctor, also from the 847 area code, we have the question in. First of the year, I went on a diet as everyone else did. I began exercising, which I've now slowed down with. I've went on an all no-carb diet, which I've now slowed down in. What is actually effective? Am I doing anything dangerously?
Great question. Thanks, caller. And I think millions of people woke up this morning with probably a very, very similar, if not an identical narrative in their head. Diets, this is the holy grail of the human existence. If we could figure this out, first of all, whoever figures it out is going to be worth $1 trillion. but more importantly, is going to be responsible for a lot of extended lives. So, I can't comment on whether you're doing things safely. It sure sounds like you are. Calorie reduction diets are exceedingly common, and they certainly can work, but they're extremely hard to maintain because you basically have a set point of calories that your body is used to, and your brain, is stimulated in a way that tells you, you know, hey, you're not getting that set point. You know, let's get things going and pick up that donut for crying out loud. So it's extremely difficult. The diets can work, but it requires a lot of discipline. And of course, there's a variety of other diets, but many of them are going to revolve around cutting carbs, simply because carbs are in some ways empty calories, and they get converted to fat in the body, which, of course, is what you're trying to avoid. So very tricky. Of course, the equation is so simple, it's almost irritating. The amount of energy you expend has to be greater than the amount you take in, and then you burn fat. I mean, it's as simple as that, but really tricky.
I don't even know what the current popular diet fads are, but there's always a just eat this and you'll lose all kinds of weight. Just eat that. Just take this. Just take that. What is really, is it just moderation really that works best? Or are some of these, trendy fad diets actually effective and healthy?
Well, moderation is my MO. So I'll just be clear that, I would love to lose a few LBs and become a physical specimen to be admired. I know that probably isn't going to be achieved, but, I try to just keep the sugar low and try and avoid sugary drinks and sodas because we know that those contribute to risk for diabetes and weight gain. And I try and keep my saturated fat intake low, meaning that I try to eat fewer hamburgers and more pieces of salmon. But do I eat hamburgers? Of course. There's nothing better than a juicier smash burger on a nice Sunday afternoon. but that being said, one diet that has come to light recently is the intermittent fasting diet. Mm. And there have been studies published, one in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is a pretty mainstream journal for physicians that practice clinically. And that is basically taking a chunk of the day and saying, I'm not going to eat anything between these hours. And usually it's an 18-hour period. And so, 18 or 12 or 10, I don't know that there's a specific number. And I don't know the study well enough to quote the numbers from the study. But they did note that there was a reduction in certain inflammatory markers, and there were subjective improvements in thinking, memory, physical performance. I personally have dabbled with the intermittent fasting diet. I find it to be just as challenging as the carb cutting diet. But in terms of does it work, I think we're seeing that it does work, or that it can work for some folks.
Yeah, you know, was it last week or the week before? I can't remember now. I had a colonoscopy and went through the whole procedure with that, including no eating certain number of hours before the actual procedure took place. And what I do this every time that I've had a colonoscopy. I've had three or four of them, I guess. I always think that, oh, there's no way I can go that many hours without eating or just having bouillon or, you know, clear Jell-O or something like that. But it turns out you can, which makes me think that a lot of what we go through with so-called hunger really is in our heads more than it is in our stomachs. It's something that we just kind of get used to eating all the time when really we don't need to. Turns out I didn't die after all, after just having bouillon for, I don't know, 24 hours or something. I actually felt kind of good. And, I felt a little less, sluggish and all that.
I think that's a real effect. I don't think that feeling's in your head. I think that's in your body. That's your body telling you, hey, thanks, Dean, for not, you know, shoving processed food and giving me a chance to kind of regenerate. But the trick, of course, is then doing that, replicating that every week, every month, over the long term.
Yeah, it's just getting used to it, right? I think it's just getting used to it.
That's right.
Yeah. Turns out my colonoscopy was just fine, by the way, too. I'm sure you're all.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm sure you're all very concerned about my innards that way. The 407 area code is Parkinson's disease, part of the family of diseases related to dementia.
Parkinson's, yes. So Parkinson's disease is a disease that. Basically, it's a progressive disorder of the nervous system, and it's very commonly associated with dementia. There's also slowed movement, rigidity of the muscles, tremors, speech changes, and it's a chronic disease. Many people would think of somebody like Michael J. Fox. If they're looking for somebody that, you know, they can think of and relate to who has the disease, and it can't be cured, but some of the medicines that are available for Parkinson's do help improve the symptoms, and there's some thought that maybe deep brain stimulation may be an option down the line when that becomes more mainstream.
But similar to dementia or not really?
I think you could definitely put it in that category where you basically have these protein changes in the brain that form clumps and basically disrupt the normal architecture of the brain, sort of similar to Alzheimer's, where you have these plaques and proteins that are found in the brain. So, yes.
Similar in how it works, but obviously two completely different things. Dr. Jeremy Silver is the medical director of emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. And it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Doctor. Thank you, and I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you.
Dean, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, so a pretty big day with Chris Chelios's number being retired. And they'll hoist it right up
into the rafters.
Into the rafters over at the United Center.
Yep, he'll join eight others that are already retired. One is retired for two players.
Bobby Hull.
Let's see. Glenn Hall, number one. Keith Magnuson and Pierre Palat have number three shared.
Okay.
Number nine, of course, for Bobby Hull.
Yeah.
I believe number 21 for Stan Mikita.
Yeah.
Number 35 for Tony Esposito.
Oh, of course.
And the latest before today was number 81, Marian Hossa.
Tom Skilling have a jersey up there anywhere?
That would be, depending on the temperature, would be the number.
I've heard that Tom actually wants to be hoisted. Tom himself wants to be hoisted up.
I tell you what, he'd get a great view of everything there. I mean, concerts, basketball,
hockey. Hey, somebody let me down from here. Hi, guys. How are you?
The wind's aloft.
He'd be waving at people. Never mind that he's up in the rafters.
He can drop T-shirts down to the crowd.
The only guy who would be able to give a forecast for an indoor stadium and people would probably pay attention.
Right. And they care about it more than anyone else.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
How are you? Thank you.
I can't believe it.
You give the best weather forecast in the city of Chicago. Jeez.
What are you going to do when you retire?
I'm going to put my feet up on a nice, big, comfy chair.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
That's Tom Skilly. Hey, dude.
You look good.
Aren't you nice?
You do.
You look good.
But you are going to do something, right? You know what they say.
What's that?
When you retire, you should keep busy.
Okay.
You shouldn't just sit in a recliner.
Okay. Aren't you nice?
Well, you enjoy.
Thank you.
You deserve it.
Thank you so much.
We had a ball with you, too.
Thank you so much for being so fantastic.
It's always a pleasure watching you. You know, clearly enjoyed what you did.
So you got to have a hobby or get another job or be busy.
You know what I like is polka dancing.
Get out.
Oh, I'm going to miss you, too. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pleasure.
Can we get a picture?
Absolutely.
I jumped out of the car because I saw you.
Aren't you nice? You wanted to come and say hello?
I do. Can I have a...
Oh, hey, Tom Skilling hugs.
Now, I should feel a little bit guilty that I went out onto the street and pretended to be Tom Skilling.
Taking pictures, I love it.
I think that's identity theft.
I suppose you could put it that way. I mean, it happens all the time. If I go to the grocery store this afternoon, at least one person will think I'm Tom Skilling.
That's awesome.
Happens all the time. So when we went out, we went in front of, is it still called the Thompson Center? Or did they change it yet?
I haven't changed it yet, but I know what you're talking about.
But that's where we were, across from City Hall. We were out there, and people were stopping their cars. They were taking pictures with me. And a better person would feel guilty or would have said, no, I'm not Tom Skilling. This is just a joke. We let every single person think that they really met Tom Skilling that day.
That's funny.
I'm sure you passed it on to Tom, right? I'm sure you took the messages and you brought them to him. So you weren't really faking it, right?
Yeah, no, we were pretty much faking it. You may have heard about it by now, but we didn't even really tell him that we were out there spoofing him.
Like that lady said, hey, dude.
Yeah. Just in all fairness, a couple of people, one lady comes rushing up toward me and then sort of stops in her trash, goes, oh, you're not Tom Skilling. A guy is driving by, rolls his window down, and I think we've got him. And he goes, hey, Dean, how are you?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So not everybody was completely fooled, but enough where we got some fun out of it anyway. Andy Richter coming up on the show about 11:30 this morning. Looking forward to that. We've got the cast of the Jersey Boys, new production of Jersey Boys. It's getting ready to open in Chicago. They're going to join us and perform live for us in studio today. And Andy, Ryan is here for Schwani today. As I've mentioned many times on the show, most everything that I learn, new things that I learn in the elevator. Coming up here to WGN.
Sure.
We have one of those info screens in the screen in the elevator. So, you know, coming up to the 18th floor, you can get two, three pretty good solid pieces of information coming up here. And today I learned that 70s weddings are all the rage.
Really?
That's going to be a big deal this summer, 70s weddings.
Lots of wood paneling.
Leisure suits.
Well, that's what I wondered. I don't exactly know what a 70s wedding is.
Disco.
It did say the disco balls would be. But I don't remember disco balls at weddings back in the 70s.
I don't either.
I don't remember that happening.
I bet those wedding dresses from the 70s were unique.
Colors-wise, I mean, probably.
Well, yeah. Lots of ruffles, I'm sure.
I am thinking that. If anybody knows, 312-981-7200. What would define a 70s wedding? But I do remember, I mean, from the guy perspective, because I was a groomsman a couple of times, best man for friends at, you know, weddings that took place in the 70s. And I do remember a lot of ruffles.
Big collars.
Yeah, big collars. My brother at the time was, I think, 6, and he stood up at our neighbor's daughter's wedding. And I vividly remember the picture because my dad took a picture of myself and my brother. He had on a white white suit with brown accents and the big ruffles in the middle there.
Mm.
That was the tuxedo that the groomsmen had.
Yeah.
And I had a gray leisure suit on.
Yeah. Well, that's you still.
Yeah.
You go to pretty any kind of fancy affair with Andy even today.
I wore it in today.
He still wears. Andy's very Andy. A lot of guys can't pull off the lime green.
No, it brings out the color of my eyes.
It brings out his eyes. Exactly right. I was in a wedding. I will say I was in a wedding in the 70s, and I don't know if this was so much 70s as just the bad taste of whoever chose all this. But we were in, I guess you might say, flesh-colored tuxedos. Hmm. With a top hat, cane, and tails.
Oh, man.
Top hat, cane, and tails. And maybe there might have been gloves involved also for the men.
Have you worn a top hat since then?
I believe that may have been the only time in my whole life that, except for that brief period where I was an Abraham Lincoln impersonator.
Uh-huh.
Did some Mr. Peanut ads, too.
I was going to say, was the monocle part of it or what?
And let me just say, the whole male bridal, is it bridal party for the men, the groomsmen?
Groomsmen.
The groomsmen. Not one of us was in shape. So a light-colored tuxedo like that in the first place, bad fashion choice, number one. Add on the top hat, the cane, and the tails, and we looked like the Penguin on Batman. Mm.
What was the facial hair situation going on?
We were pretty hairy back then. Most of us had, I had a beard. And I think most everybody had beards. It was not a good looking line of groomsmen. But I don't know that was that 70s? Would that be considered 70, quintessential 70s style?
Yeah, I'm thinking, with the ruffles, the top hats, and the unique colors, that's probably more 70s.
Yeah. Now, my prom tuxedo, that was quintessential 70s. That was light blue. Also, not a good choice for the husky big boy. Not the perfect color choice for anyone who could use a few LBs. But it was light blue. It had ruffles on the front of the shirt and also on the cuffs. Mm. And what else did we have? Oh, just the whole thing was awful. Some people on the text line here. Let's see. Dean, I got married in the 70s. Bright colored suits and tuxes, ruffles, and the brides wore hats.
Ah.
Colors were pastels. Oh, in the top hat, cane, flesh-colored tuxedo wedding, the brides wore hats and had parasols also.
Oh.
Yeah. Just to complete the look.
Yeah, there would be pastels in the 70s. It would be fluorescent colors in the 80s.
Mm.
You know, like that green was always, and yellows were always big.
Yeah, right.
And 50 years from now, I wonder what 2020 weddings are going to be.
Right?
They're going to be trying to, hey, remember the 2020s?
Remember when everyone dressed like Billie Eilish? The wedding.
That's why I was smart. I eloped.
Andy, that was one of the smartest things that you and Malia ever did.
Yep. On the beach.
Let me see here. Dean, I was a mid-70s bride. We had hoods, which the bride's older sister made us pull up to walk down the aisle for an August wedding.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, and they sent a picture also. Yeah, that's a very unusual looking wedding right there. What else do we have? Rainbows. A lot of people are saying 70s weddings are rainbow weddings with pastel tuxedos to match.
And mood rings. Instead of engagement rings.
Well, that's your fashion flourish.
Mood rings and pet rocks. That's what I remember from the 70s.
None of these are good fashion looks. I don't care what decade it was. And please don't bring it back. 70s weddings, do you have some thoughts and comments? 312-981-7200. Dean Richards, Sunday morning. 70s weddings are... apparently going to be all the thing this summer. Now, somebody texted in saying a 70s wedding would be where everybody looks like the Bee Gees, with mustaches, beards, and three-piece suits. Well, that's fine, but what about the guys? I don't know that I went to any weddings where everybody looked like the Bee Gees. But that makes sense. That would be, that certainly be a quintessential 70s, that's for sure. Here's one. Where did it go here? Oh, here, Dean. We had a 70s wedding and paid $5 per plate for the guests' dinner. May have been the 1870s when that actually
You can't even get a fork for $5 a table now.
Patricia, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I know you guys are talking 70s, but my brother got married like in 1980.
Okay.
And he wore a baby blue tuxedo. He's a large guy. Baby blue tuxedo with a ruffled shirt.
Yes, now see, that would be quintessentially 70s, really, even though it happened in the 80s.
Well, like I said, he got married in 1980, so he's right at the end of the 70s.
Right on the border, yeah.
Yeah, and us girls wore a peach-colored dress with big old ruffly sleeves.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what
that was a sight to see.
What was your thinking back then? Was your thinking, wow, we really look amazing, or... Like with most bridesmaids' dresses, you go, I have to wear that thing?
Well, my mother handmade 6 dresses, so we didn't even store buy them.
Okay.
They were all handmade.
All right.
And it hung in my closet after every time. So I had to say I liked it. My mother made it.
Of course you did. Of course. So baby, so was that the groomsman? Was everybody wearing baby blue, or was it just the groom?
To be honest with you, I don't remember. All I remember is my brother in a baby blue tuxedo.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the other guys wore.
Yeah, there's some, don't you think there's some trends that shouldn't come back?
Yeah, baby blue tuxedo.
There's like
ruffly shirts.
Yeah, there's like 2 guys in the whole world who could wear something like that. Everybody else should stick with basic black. Black looks good on everybody. Appreciate the call, Patricia. Thank you very much. Is this Nucio? Nucio? Oh, Terry, excuse me.
Yes.
You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi. Yes. My husband and I, we got married in 1980.
Okay.
And we had like 16 couples in our bridal party. That was with the junior bridesmaid and the ring bearer and everybody. And the bridesmaids had pastel colors. It was, each top was a different color, like pink or blue or yellow or green, like pastel colors.
Yeah.
And the bottom was a rainbow. It was a flourishy, like a swing rainbow color. So the groomsmen matched the bridesmaids, which was each groomsman had like a pink or blue or yellow pastel color shirt with the ruffle and the cummerbund. And I'm sure the bridesmaids thought, oh my goodness, do I have to wear this? But I had these, we went to a dress designer and she made these dresses for everybody.
Mm.
And then we had our wedding at the Starlight Inn, which at the time it was by O'Hare. And at the time it was expensive,
right.
And it was a fancy restaurant because it was on top where you could see the airplanes taking off.
Right.
And I think our meals were like $10 each, and that was expensive
at
the time.
That was expensive back then, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. This wedding that I was in with the top hat, cane, and tails, William Tell Inn. You know, do you ever?
I remember that.
It's a famous place, I think. LaGrange or Countryside, somewhere out there.
Yeah.
But, wow. I'm going to have to go look at these pictures again just for some good memories. Appreciate the call,
yeah.
Terry. Thank you. Kathy, you're on WGN. You had a bicentennial wedding?
I was a bridesmaid.
A bridesmaid. Okay.
Wedding.
All right.
And we had navy blue dresses with white trim and red trim that Mom added to the dresses.
Oh, so
and
you
then
were.
And we carried white baskets with red and blue flowers in them.
Oh, so you were red, white, and blue. You were really bicentennial.
You bet then. The fellas had to wear white tuxes, but blue velvet vests. And it was an August wedding.
Wow.
And it was like 90 degrees out. They died. We blew dolphins up.
Wow.
But that was the 70s wedding I was in.
Wow. I've never heard of a bicentennial wedding like that. That's amazing.
Well, and I've never seen one before or since where you wear red, white, blue. Oh, and I forgot, we have big white picture hats.
Oh, of course you do. You had to have the hats.
Yeah.
Listen to this 630 area code. I was in a 70s wedding where the girls wore floppy hats and carried baskets with flowers, and the guys had white tuxedos. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, this was pretty close, except for the navy blue dresses, which, again, it was 90 degrees in August, and they weren't particularly comfortable. But the bride gets what the bride wants.
The bride gets what she wants. Exactly right. It's her day. Kathy, thank you for the call. That's a fantastic memory. Patrick, how about you? 70s weddings?
68.
Okay, close enough.
68, and it was unbelievable because I say we were from back of the yards. People didn't wear tuxedos over there, and we were all veterans. There were three. I had three of my buddies in the wedding party, and we were all veterans and good size. I was 6'6", 250, and people would still call me a slim. And the tails, I said, are you kidding me, tails? And she says, well, you went out one time, this girl I was dating before, and she had a woman, her boss wanted her to, they didn't, her and her husband didn't drive, take him to the wedding real short. So I said, yeah, okay, so we'll pick him up. We went over, they came out of the hotel, and he had this gentleman, now he was older, but he had on a black tuxedo, a black cape, a top hat, and a cane. And I said, my God, what's with this guy? And she said, well, he's from France, and he's the president of the French consulate.
Okay.
He takes all the complaints. I said, well, okay. What could I do? But our wedding was, like I say, with tails in the morning.
Yeah.
And then the straights. Tuxedo in the evening.
Just like a dinner jacket for night.
And, yeah, it was just comfortable for everybody in the evening. In the morning, everybody was in shock that we would do that,
yeah.
You know, because nobody was sophisticated, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
we were just normal American
people. Yeah, well, that was a big deal to have their wardrobe change in the middle of the day. That was super fancy, you got to admit. Patrick, yeah. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. I'm gonna find a cape in my size and wear it in your honor. Thank you. 10:37, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Time for our Week in Theater segment, sponsored by Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Richard III this week. But we're going to talk about another show that will be opening soon in Chicago. And this is actually your first peek at the new production of Jersey Boys, which is coming to Chicago, the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and how they started and how it all exploded in a very positive way. This is also kind of a first for Jersey Boys here in the Chicago area in that it is the first production of Jersey Boys that is actually built in Chicago. And let me turn on all the microphones in the room, because I want our Jersey Boys here to introduce themselves, starting here.
Yeah, hi, I'm Andrew McNaughton, and I'll be playing Bob Gaudio in this production.
Hi, I'm Michael Metcalf. I'm playing Frankie Valli.
I am Jason Michael Evans. I'm playing Nick Massey.
I'm Adrian Aguilar, and I'm playing Tommy DeVito.
Tommy DeVito. Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, it's amazing to me how this show has taken off and exploded all these years. Ran on Broadway, won all kinds of Tony Awards, and has toured around the country. So how is this production, this first made-in-Chicago production, different, Frankie Valli, than what we have seen in the past?
Well, It hasn't been to Chicago in, I think it was last year on tour, almost 15, close to 20 years ago now. So we're bringing it back, and we're trying to do something new with it too. We want to make it a Chicago staple right here.
So is the production the same? The staging?
Well,
all of it. I mean, if we've seen Jersey Boys before, is this a similar kind of version?
I think you can expect to hear the same songs, and it'll be the same scenes and the same dialogue. But we are definitely. We're bringing something new to it, right?
I would say that one thing, I've been in Chicago a long time, and one of my favorite things about Chicago is what we would call, at least in the city, Chicago style theater, which is a little bit hard to describe. If you had to put parameters on it, it would be a little bit hard to kind of quantify it, but I think this is definitely a Chicago style production. The space is a little smaller, which means the audience is a little closer. It's a little more intimate.
Let me just tell you on that point, I can't wait to see the show.
Oh yeah, well, we can't wait for you to see it either.
I always felt like I was in the the United Center or something.
Yeah,
seeing that show, sure. And now I know. At the Mercury Theater, I'm going to practically reach out and touch.
Very intimate production.
And I may, by the way, if you move me during any of the songs.
Tommy's always open to that.
Tommy's been famous for that. But no, I'm looking forward to the intimacy of seeing the show, because it's got to be like what it was really like to see the Four Seasons, right?
When they
were first starting and playing small clubs.
Absolutely. For those who don't know, the theater is 280 seats. And so basically it's a very intimate space. I think the choreography is definitely going to be different. The staging, the directing, everything's going to be different in that sense as well. So you're not going to see the same production that you've seen on tour or on Broadway for this production.
Yeah. Now, if anybody can speak to how this version might be different from previous versions. You're the only veteran of the show itself, right? Who's been in other productions of Jersey Boys around the country, right?
Yeah, Jason Evans here. This is my sixth time doing the show in a very short time span. And the thing with a show like Jersey Boys, because it only closed on Broadway less than 10 years ago, all the original creatives, a lot of people who were in those original productions are still of age to take part. So it's really, really rare to get a new production that doesn't have some kind of connection with the original staging. And that's what's so lovely about this one, is that it's not adherent to the strictures of what the original vision was, which was great. Everyone loved that original vision. But what's so good about theater is the reinterpretation of shows, the reinterpretation of the material. That's why we revive shows over and over again. And this is the first one I've been a part of that doesn't want to do exactly what they did before. They want to interpret it for themselves. They want it to be a standalone production. And that's really enthralling for someone like me, who's been doing the show for the better part of 2.5 years, just seeing all these new takes, these new minds giving their input and letting the art grow from a different place.
Yeah, you get to exercise a little bit of your own creative muscle.
Exactly.
In this, right? That you don't have to, you're not limited by parameters that the original show producers put on the show. Because I don't know if people know this, that when shows are done in other cities, they have to get extremely strict approval from the producers, from the music people, from everybody, even high school productions when they put on shows. You know, these kids come in and they have strict parameters how to do all this. So that you guys get to, kind of break the chains a little bit and do your own thing with this, yet remaining true. You have to do both, right?
Yeah.
You have to, do your own thing, but still give the people what they want when they come in for the show.
Yeah, jumping on that as well, this team has been wanting to do this production for 10 years. So for them, it's very, very close to their heart, and it's been bubbling for this amount of time. So they are finally able to do it. And I'm so blessed to be able to do this show. And I think the energy in the room is incredible, because you can tell everybody is so in it.
Yeah.
And it's going to breathe a new life to this production as well.
Yeah, I predict. I mean, right now the show is scheduled to open for previews on March 15th and then officially open on March 28th and is scheduled to run May the 19th. I'm predicting you're going to be here in Chicago for a while.
We hope so.
That's a big hope.
If that's possible, because I mean, it just seems like this is the kind of show that people are going to want to come and see. Even if you've seen it before, you're going to want to see it again and see it over and over and bring friends and relatives. Mm-hmm. Because it's the music of the Four Seasons, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How is that intimidating in any way to be doing the songs of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm judging by the look on your face that you're a bit terrified at this point.
Big shoes to fill. Big shoes to fill.
Especially you as Frankie Valli, right?
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, I have a great team around me and great guys to back me up. So that's really what it's about.
Michael's being really humble. He's wonderful.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I can attest. He sounds awesome. Oh, yeah. The audience is going to love it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out in a minute.
Yeah. That's true.
We'll be the judge of that. Just a few minutes here. Do you have to meet with Frankie Valli, or do you get notes from Frankie Valli? And
personally,
like
yes,
the Four Seasons?
He's texting with Michael right now.
Stop talking right now.
No, but I think it's amazing that he's still out there doing it though.
Right?
89, he's going to be 90 this year.
Yeah.
And he's still performing. He's on tour right now, right?
I think he's in Rose.
He's going to be in Rosemont.
Next year, like at the end of the year sometime. Yeah.
He is. I was amazed when I saw that come up on the schedule.
Good for him.
I stopped and I was like, how old is Frankie Valli? He's still touring. And then I saw these like 89 something. It's like, if I'm still here and I'm 89 years old and I'm still doing this show, somebody please stop me. Somebody please send me home right away if that's the case. Do you study Four Seasons performances? I mean, what do you do to prepare going into something like this?
So we've got we've got an amazing team that's putting the show together, including, I'm not sure who's out there listening has had theater experience. There's a position called a dramaturg who does all of the sort of history and kind of presents us with a nicely packaged, lots of links of videos and sounds and songs and things like that. But honestly, at least discussing with the four guys in this room, we kind of all went around one of the first days and said, so what was your inspiration to be in the show? Have you ever heard of the show? Have you ever seen the show? And a lot of us have the same story, which is that we grew up on the Four Seasons. Mm. I grew up on the Four Seasons. I was telling this story to the cast, who most of them were too young, but you'll probably remember I got a Coconuts gift card. A gift card to Coconuts.
Coconuts,
yes.
Music,
I just saw it hit you, right?
Oh, yeah.
When I was like 10.
I think
10.
I still have some gift cards I never cashed in.
I remember I was about 10 years old, and I got a two-disc Four Seasons collection.
Yeah.
And I was 10, 11, 12 years old listening to these songs in my room on my Discman and writing down the lyrics on a notebook.
On your Discman.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a lot of us have that thing where it's like they presented us with, here's who the Four Seasons were, here's the history, here's their original songs. And a lot of us just went, yeah, no problem, got it.
Yeah.
I've been living with this for a long time. Yeah. So this is sort of our chance to live out our childhood dreams of being one of the Four Seasons.
Yeah, that's amazing. Jason, same? Same kind of experience.
I didn't grow up too much with this music. My parents were more of the Beatles fandom.
Okay.
So if I was listening to oldies, it was that. Of course, I'm always familiar with it because you hear this music everywhere, and now a lot of these songs are being redone by modern day artists. But I was aware of it the moment the show came out. I had been eyeballing it well before I came of age to play any of these roles. So the music doesn't have that kind of sentimentality back to childhood for me, but it definitely carries weight into adulthood because I connect it with this story of Jersey Boys. So I wasn't really a huge listener of this music until this show came out, but it's been long enough now that I can look back on that, almost two decades and still see how this music moved me, just not back to early childhood the way Adrian can.
I think about the show Million Dollar Quartet when I hear about shows like this where I think I interviewed every single configuration of Million Dollar Quartet that came through Chicago. They were sitting where you're sitting right now. And I always wondered, are you actors first? Are you musicians first? Because both of these shows are so music-centric.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. It depends on your passion, I guess, too. Like, some people, like, I find myself in that vein where I can be a piano player as well as a singer, as well as an actor, as a dancer. Just kind of how I grew up with my family. But this music is timeless. I've known this since I was 16 years old. I'm Canadian, so I saw the production in Toronto, and I became obsessed with it. And over time, I mean, this, the Can't Take My Eyes Off of You was Lauryn Hill, like, made it, like, it's right. Still around, right? Sure. Måneskin did Begging, the 2020 Eurovision winners. Like, this music is still around, and I find that when people listen to this music, it brings back so many memories and they don't even realize it. But yeah, I mean, as performers, it's incredible to be able, like, I'm gonna have the chance to play piano on stage, which is really exciting. But yeah, all of us, you know, we all have different backgrounds and different experiences, but I find it's wonderful that they're giving us the option to be able to do that as well. Yeah,
it's gonna be a really cool production. I can't wait to see it. We're gonna get a little preview of it. The guys are going to perform a song from the show for us coming up in just a minute, but just as a reminder, Jersey Boys will open in previews starting March 15th. It will officially open March 28th and be over at the Mercury Theater in Chicago, 3745 North Southport, until May the 19th. And you'll be able to get tickets at the box office or by going to mercurytheaterchicago.com. Back with more in just a minute. They're the original Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons with their hit Who Loves You, or really kind of the signature song of this show, Jersey Boys. The one that was performed on the Tony Awards. But this new production of Jersey Boys that will be opening March 15th at the Mercury Theater in Chicago will feature it all for you. We are so happy to have the cast in here with us. So what are you guys doing right now? Are you in rehearsals? Are you doing... I know they're doing new things in the theater. I'm told they're putting new seats in. You guys must really rate to be the group that they bring new seats in for.
And a new sound system.
New seats and new
sound pressure.
System.
No pressure at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can really enjoy it. So, I mean, the Mercury Theater was perfectly fine, you know, before as well. But the fact that they're doing this says... they have a lot of confidence that this is going to be a big, big show there. I think they're predicting they're going to be going past May 19th also, if they're making that kind of investment in the theater. So we're going to look forward to that. What stage of rehearsal are you at right now?
So this will be our sixth day, I think, today.
And this is the last day of the first week.
And last day of the first week. Yeah. So we've been going for about a week now, 8 hours a day, learning the dances,
learned all the music, about half the dances, done all the dances through Act One, and have now begun staging the show. But we know the whole show. Everyone's done all their homework, and now we're just in the process of putting it on its feet.
Yeah, just really buffing up the any rough edges that may still be there for the show.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. Do you have favorite parts of the show? Would be like asking somebody who's your favorite child.
Oh my gosh.
Well, the thing about this is that we all have our quote season, so the show is cut up into four quarters. Each of them belong to a different one of us, in the sense that we sort of address the audience and tell our side of the story. So I mean, for me, my favorite part of the show is my season, because I get to tell it the way I see it. And I would venture to guess that might be the same for all four of us, though. Interject if that's not the case.
It's kind of impossible to pick, especially with someone for myself, because I've got my heart is in every single one of these songs, whether I sing it or not. So, you know, if I said this is my favorite part, then I'd go, wait, but that song. But no, I'm with Jason. The same thing. It's we all get to drive the show. At some point, and that's just the most fun, to be in the driver's seat.
Makes perfect sense. What are you going to perform for us this morning?
Well, we're going to be performing Sherry for you all this morning, and we're very excited to do it.
I'm going to do my best to not spoil the song by singing along at any point.
Look, you're more than welcome.
Here they are, the cast of Jersey Boys coming to the Mercury Theater. Guys, take it away. Sherry, wow, and at this hour of the day to hit those high notes.
Michael,
Holy smokes. Man, oh man, that sounded fantastic. I cannot wait to see the show. Jersey Boys at the Mercury Theater in Chicago starting March 15th for previews, March 28th for performances, and you can get your tickets at Mercury. theaterchicago.com. Adrian, Jason, Andrew, Michael, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Sounded fantastic. Back with more in a news update coming up next. How about those Four Seasons guys? They sounded amazing.
That was pretty good to get those high notes this early.
The guy that played Frankie Valli, I was worried for him when he was hitting some of those high notes. But the look on his face and how he's able to do that is amazing. But their harmony together, I can't wait to go see that show.
That's good stuff.
It was weird how you introduced yourself to them as Tom Skilling, though.
Did they buy it?
Look, Skilling's going to be out of my hair, so to speak, in a week. I can take over the entire franchise in no time at all. These guys, they're amazing. Mercury Theater, Chicago, some people are texting in and asking where they can see them. They're going to be quite amazing. The big show today, though, is all going to be at the United Center, it seems like. Patrick Kane, number one, is going to be back. Is this his first time back as a Red Wing?
First time back as a visitor, period. They traded him to the Rangers last year, and New York only makes one trip here, and they'd already made that trip. So this will be the first time he comes to the United Center as a visitor, period.
Wow. So you think he gets booed?
The only way he'll get booed is if he scores a goal.
I can't imagine people.
But I don't think he'll get booed. Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone. Yeah.
I can't wait to the video tribute is going to be pretty cool too, I'm sure.
Yeah. They're going to do a video tribute to him also.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, they've done it for visitors, making their first trip.
If I show up today, will they give me a video?
Well, had you won a Stanley Cup with them, probably.
It's going to be a Skilling one, though.
Yeah, there will be. That'll be right after the Chelios ceremony. It'll be the Tom Skilling raising to the roof.
That's when I go on. After Skilling retires and I go on my Tom Skilling tour, like Elvis impersonators, I'm going to be the Tom Skilling impersonator.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Going around with weather maps and the such. So that's going to happen today, and jersey or sweaters?
It's actually technically a sweater.
Sweater, yeah.
Sweater. Hockey players call them sweaters. I just like to say that the number 7 will be retired for Chris Chelios.
That's the best way, yeah.
It'll probably be retired one more time later on for Brent Seabrook, I would imagine, somewhere down the line, because the Blackhawks do have one number that's retired twice. Keith Magnuson, number 3, and also Pierre Palat, who was on the 1961 championship team. He's got that number retired as well.
All right.
But that's a 310.
All right.
So if you're going to the game, they want you in your seats by 3. And then, of course, the game phases off at 5. Joe Brand will have the official Blackhawks pregame at 4:30.
Okay, but we've also got that special...
Yeah, the live broadcast coming up at 2.
The Drunk Fest.
The Drunken Fest, correct.
With Joe and Kevin.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of them flicking the lights on and off to try to get people in their seats. Okay, guys. 3:10.
I don't want to have to flick these lights again. I don't want to call your parents.
Playing the little chimes like they do when it's time to come in for a dinner, a fancy dinner. Bung, bung.
Come and get it.
The great George Harrison kicking off our 11 o'clock hour today would have been George Harrison's 81st birthday. Born in 1943. And, what music he made as part of the Beatles. If you watch any of the Beatles documentaries, you know George's invaluable contributions. But after the Beatles broke up and the very innovative music that he made was really groundbreaking at the time. And we lost George way, way, way too early to cancer. But what a great contribution! What a lovely legacy that he left us with all of his music. And how about this story this week of the 4 Beatle movies that are going to be made by director Sam Mendes? Sam Mendes, who's given us American Beauty and just a whole slew of Oscar-winning movies, Road to Perdition that he shot here in Chicago with Tom Hanks and Paul Newman. And, just a star-studded cast. I remember while they were shooting it, I remember the world premiere that they had over at the Chicago Theater, the after-party that they had over at Gene and Georgetti's for Road to Perdition. And Sam Mendes always made himself so available to talk. He's a phenomenal filmmaker. And, interesting that there has never really been a biopic movie about the Beatles.
a movie in which other actors play the Beatles to tell their story. But Sam Mendes, very interestingly, is going to do four different movies and is going to do one movie per Beatle, a movie about each of the four Beatles, which I think is going to be very interesting. A lot of people have said, well, who will be playing John, Paul, George, and Ringo? I don't know. It's got to be unknown actors, I would think. They haven't said anything. They haven't announced anything. But it has to be younger actors, I would think, who kind of look like them. I really can't think of anybody who particularly, you know, a younger actor in their 20s, I guess, that resemble John, Paul, George, and Ringo. So we're just going to have to wait on all that. They said these movies aren't even going to be out until 2027. So, Andy, your favorite Beatle?
I go with Paul. I know it's a layup, but I like Paul.
I like to think that also, but the more I dig into, the more I learn about George Harrison and all that he did, he's a tied for me right now. Might be the same. Ryan, you got a favorite?
Yeah, I'd go with Beatle? Same. Yeah, I would Paul? Say Paul, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I really feel bad for everyone else.
You know, George had a little sense of humor, too. I mean, wasn't it the... He was accused of one of his songs sounding like someone else's, and then he wrote a song about it.
My Sweet Lord.
And then this song came out, and it was basically ripping into the fact that it didn't sound like any of their songs.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, there was was it My Sweet Lord, or was it What Is Life? I think My Sweet Lord.
Yeah, it was one of those, two.
It was one of his quintessential songs, yeah. I think, of My Sweet Lord. Somebody said that he ripped them off. Yeah, because that's what George Harrison of the Beatles
was going to do. Yeah, he needed to rip people off.
He was going to rip off your chintzy song that nobody ever heard of.
Yeah.
But then he came back with the perfect response song to that all. I don't know. Now you're making me question that. Paul's pretty great. Have either of you seen... Got to see Paul in concert at all?
No, I've not.
Yeah, I did at Lollapalooza a few years ago. Yeah,
Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
That was a good show. That was an amazing show.
He's kind
of
a goofball, isn't he?
He is a little bit of a goofball, considering he's Paul McCartney, and he can pretty much do anything he wants to do. He does have a lot of fun on stage, but he still sounds great. He looks great. I remember seeing him at Wrigley Field, and I think it was like a three-hour show. And he was, might have been like 75 years old or something.
Wow.
Then, not that a 75-year-old isn't, you know, energetic and, you know, can do special things. But a three-hour show for anybody is, I'm tired after 3 hours of this show.
Yeah.
He's an amazing performer and still sounds great and gives you just enough Beatles music and just enough Wings music. And then, you know, sprinkled it with some new stuff as well. Ringo is, I don't know. I'm
kind of underrated.
I'm having a hard time really deciding who my favorite is now that I think of it. Because I do like George quite a bit. I love Ringo because he's still out and touring.
Right.
With Joe Walsh. And, you know, he's got all these, you know, like classic rock and rollers that perform with him. And, you know, John Lennon's music, cut short, of course, but that Double Fantasy album, that last album that John Lennon put out was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. And it makes me think, anyway, John Lennon be giving us now? You know, if he were still around, what would we still get?
So. I was just listening to a podcast about Michael Jackson and the coming together of him and Paul McCartney for The Girl Is Mine.
Yeah,
and how neither of them really were sure if that would be good for their careers coming together. I mean, now we look at it, we're like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
two
right.
superstars. But both of them were on different trajectories at that point and didn't know if that was going to be the way to go.
Yeah. That's a little creepy, though, The Girl.
Yeah,
because Paul was so much older than Michael. I mean, never mind a lot of other reasons, but that somebody of Paul's age and somebody of Michael's age at the time would be after the same girl always seemed a little creepy to me. That's just me. Have either of you seen the We Are the World documentary?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Fantastic.
That is an amazing piece of work. You know what? Today is the anniversary of when We Are the World won Grammy for Record of the Year that year as well.
Just that whole, just to think that no cell phones, no email, none of that to be able to get a hold of people and to put that all together in one night.
What just a fantastic performer Lionel Richie is. Holy cow.
Man.
What a day he had.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
Just that they were able to corral all of those people, all of that talent.
And egos.
And egos that must have gone along with all of that. Exactly right.
Yeah, there's something great in the documentary about the egos. I won't spoil it because they put a sign up in the studio.
No ego is allowed or something, right?
Check your ego at the door.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember seeing that when it was happening. Not when it was happening, but I remember seeing like a video of it or something.
The footage of Michael by himself, too, when everyone else was at the awards. I feel I'm giving everything away, but that's really
still,
cool.
It's really cool
to see him all by himself, just him in a microphone.
Yeah, these are not spoilers. This will not in any way spoil watching this documentary because it's amazing. Lionel Richie was on Jimmy Kimmel this past week, and he talked about one of his regrets of producing that was not putting Madonna in the We Are the World video.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they chose Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
Because they thought that her voice was a little more distinctive for the short solo performance, which was amazing. I mean, it really is still kind of signature, Cyndi Lauper's part of that song. But Madonna was just beginning to happen then. I don't think they realized the superstardom that she would become at the time. But
and the Prince factor in all of that, too. That was interesting.
Yeah, also in it. And some of the choices that they did make, like Dan Aykroyd being part of it. It's like, what's he doing?
That's the great mystery still.
I always have said that. What is he doing in this bunch of people?
Well, I mean, he was part of the Blues Brothers, but I mean, come on. That was much, much, much earlier than that.
Come on.
That was the early 80s.
Yeah, I mean, they picked a few people in there that I didn't quite get, but and omitted some people that, now years later we can look back at and go, what was that all about?
Yeah, the other thing that came out of that was just what a master Quincy Jones was to be able to orchestrate it all. And literally, he was the man orchestrating everything.
All right, I think you're going to make me play a little of the song here.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, you're going to make me play a little of that, maybe when we come right back. All right, tomorrow on the WGN-TV Morning News, I'm going to be talking with Ziggy Marley about the movie that he produced about his dad, the legendary Bob Marley. It's tomorrow on WGN-TV Morning News. And coming up after Ryan updates the news at 11:30, we'll be talking live with Andy Richter, who is one of Chicago's very own. But with all this talk of the We Are the World documentary that's out there and all the little inside stories, we got to have a little bit of it here. Wow, the list just goes on and on and on. I forgot how spectacular that was. To see Harry Belafonte singing and Bette Midler and Huey Lewis and Bob Dylan, of course, was a classic voice in there. If you get a chance, check out that We Are the World documentary. You will absolutely enjoy it. Coming up after the 11:30 news, Andy Richter joins us live.
Riding on the success of Evita, producers hurry to release the life story of another prominent woman. Bubita, the trials and tribulations of Pamela Lee.
The urban dialect Ebonics will replace English as the nation's chief language. Instead of ending the inaugural oath with, "So help me God," presidents will say, "Yo, God, don't play me, sucker."
From 1997, one of the signature pieces on the Late Night with Conan O'Brien show. Just a classic, classic, great comedy show that went on to The Tonight Show, and then Conan and Andy Richter going over to TBS, and now in podcast form. It is just genius, absolute genius comedy. Conan O'Brien will save accolades for him for another time when he's on the show, because right now we've got Chicago's very own Andy Richter, who's on the line with us. Andy, good morning. So great to have you with us. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very good, thanks.
So when
I'm out here in Los Angeles, but I'm getting ready to come into town soon.
Yeah, you got a big benefit coming up this Thursday night at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, Comedy for Cancer, with all kinds of local comedians who are going to be performing with you. We're very much looking forward to all that. When you hear some of these old Conan bits, like the year 2000,
you mean some of that highbrow comedy, that like Boobica?
I'm sorry. You know what? I spit coffee out all over my desk this morning when I was watching that. I could watch these Conan reruns, these YouTube clips every single day. These are still so hilariously funny. But what would go through your mind when you're hearing these things?
Oh, I mean, well, first of all, I always kind of am because it was a surprise that I was going to hear that. And I always try to think, like, if I can remember it, remember the particular thing, because we did so much stuff over the years. And then I stepped out for a few years. I left and came to L.A. and did shows of my own for a while before I went back. So there's just so much stuff that it's possible for me to watch myself in a video in, like, a ridiculous costume or out on a location somewhere and have no recollection of it whatsoever because there's just so much stuff. But I am, I will say I always am pleased by, like you said, it holds up. And I think one of the reasons that our stuff holds up is because we just tried to be silly. We weren't really trying to be topical. So, I mean, we had to be somewhat topical because it's a volume business and you need something to make jokes about.
Yeah.
When we started out, we thought we were going to like not do topical humor, because that's like eat your vegetables humor. We were going to do like just silly, weird stuff that only mattered to us. And then we realized, oh no, there's 5 days a week we got to fill.
Yeah.
We gotta take something. We gotta rip something from the headlines.
Right. I can only imagine.
But we did focus on being silly, and I think that that's why you can listen to it now, and you don't need to remember what happened in October of 1999.
Right. Exactly. To have that frame of reference of the news. But I was also thinking about when you guys went on the air with the original late night show. You guys were stepping in for Letterman. Conan was unknown. I mean, you sort of had nothing to lose at that point, but only to blaze your own trail, right? As you were going along,
kinda. Well, I mean, we didn't have. I guess the only stakes were that if we fell flat on our face, it would kind of impede further work,
right.
But
I guess you had a little to lose. Yeah.
Yeah. We were unknown, and it ended up being kind of a hostile environment to be born into. Mm-hmm. Because people had come, people love David Letterman. I love David Letterman. David Letterman, to be on a show that was replacing him, he was one of my main formative influences in comedy. So it was already sort of daunting in a way to fill in for him. And there, we were very, very green. And so people had a right to say, hey, these guys are green. But they were pretty harsh. As I've said before, I read in print virtually every way that it would be possible to call me fat. portly, chubby, cherubic.
Wow.
They always had to mention something about that. There were some people that were just outright nasty.
Yeah.
And the network wasn't very supportive. They like things to hit right away. They like things to. When they already, Letterman left them, so they were already feeling jilted
And then we came in with our weird stuff that they were like, what? You know? What? It, yeah, mass baiting bear? What?
That was... Maybe my favorite character on the show, by the way. Because it was so ridiculous. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just... That's what I mean. You can go back and look at these things, and they're so ridiculous that they are side-splitting laughter, which is, in the end of the day, is what a comedy show is supposed to do. So,
I agree.
All that, what you must have all gone through, at the end of the day, sure worth it for us fans of the show. Because I think you were guys were groundbreaking. So what's it like for you to come back to the Chicago area? You grew up here in the Chicago area, now to come back to do this Comedy for Cancer benefit in Downers Grove. It's got to be a little bit of a homecoming for you, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, I love coming back. I love coming, you know, because I still have family out in the western suburbs. They're all kind of, my brother's in Brookfield, but most everybody else is kind of out towards, you know, St. Charles, Geneva, Batavia. So I've, you know, I'll come out for holidays and stuff. I don't get there as much as I'd like to, and you know, people come. It's especially depending on the time of year. It's easier to coax relatives to come to Southern California than it is to go to Illinois.
I haven't heard the forecast for Thursday yet, but I think Tuesday I heard it's going to be like 70 degrees here. So,
oh my gosh!
You know, whatever crazy global warming thing is going on will be to your benefit.
All right. Well, I'll bring everything from a parka to swimsuit.
That's right.
Just to cover my bases.
Yeah, exactly. You have to.
Yeah. But I mean, it's I love coming home, and it's such a, you know, it's such a such a, you know, I consider, sometimes I consider, like, if I could ever go back and live there again, but I don't know if my wife is from Southern California and gets cold when it's 70 degrees, right, so I don't know.
Right.
I don't know how those that'll
people.
Be.
Oh, those people. Yeah,
yeah,
I know. Yeah. I know what you mean. This sounds like it's going to be a great show on Thursday night. I know.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of our very own from WGN, Mike Toomey, who is hilarious, works with me on our WGN TV morning news, is going to be one of the comedians. Anna Belaval, who is works with me on our WGN TV morning news, is going to be part of it. But you've got, all kinds of comedy performers, with all the proceeds for the day going to the Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center at Northwestern University. So, fantastic night. What else can you tell us about this night?
Well, I mean, you pretty well covered it, but it's going to be a lot of very funny, talented people doing stand-up. I'm sort of doing, you know, like a Q&A, basically. So people, you know, I'll be moderated. It'll be like a moderated sort of interview. But I think we're also going to take questions from the crowd. And apparently they promised me that there's a lot of amazing food there, too. So that's another good reason to come.
That goes hand in hand with any appearance in Chicago, Andy.
Yes, you know, I know. Yes, I know. As a writer I once wrote, read something who said that in the Midwest, eating is an act of heroism. You know, you got to at least, you know, you got to eat some beef. But yeah, it's a great organization. They've raised a ton of money for cancer research, and you can get the tickets at HFoundation, all one word, HFoundation.org. The doors are at 6:00. The show starts at 7:30, and it should just be a really fun time. It's a great show. It's called Comedy for Cancer, which my smart Alex sister pointed out, maybe it should be a comedy against cancer. Mm. And I said, you know what it means.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Sisters can be so such pains that way. Pointing out stuff like that.
Exactly.
And this is all going to take place at the beautiful Tivoli Theater. I don't know if you have been there or not. Tivoli is like one of these gorgeous
old palace-like theaters that has been.
Yeah, an old vaudeville theater, from what I hear. I don't know that I've ever been there, but in Aurora, where I grew up, there was a Paramount theater sort of the same thing.
Yeah. I was at the Paramount just this past Sunday seeing a show. It's we're so lucky to have many of these great old performance houses that have been restored and brought back and are vital and still very busy. And the Tivoli.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, Tivoli's where you're going to be able to see Andy. Andy, let me take a quick break, and I want to just come back and talk about where you grew up and kind of your history here in the Chicago area. It's Andy Richter, who will be at the Tivoli Thursday night for Comedy for Cancer, despite what his sister says. You can get more information at hfoundation.org. It's 11:50. Gorgeous sunny Sunday morning, and happy to have Andy Richter on the line with us from Southern California. Andy will be in the Chicago area for a big benefit for the Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center at Northwestern. It's a night of comedy at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. The doors will open at 6. The show starts at 7:30. Our very own Mike Toomey, Anna Belleval, will be part of the show, and a number of other comedians in the Chicago area. Andy, for you, it started, was it Yorkville where you grew up here in the Chicago area?
Yeah, that's where I grew up. That's where my mother's family was from, all the way back to my great-grandparents were in Yorkville. And yeah, that's where I grew up. I was born. My dad was a college professor, and so we kind of moved around when I was little. And I was born in Michigan, but after my folks split up, we ended up back in Yorkville, and then pretty much stayed there through high school. Lived in Aurora for a couple of years, but you know, Yorkville is definitely my hometown.
I want to say that I used to go to a Boy Scout camp in Yorkville.
I think you did, yeah. There was a Boy Scout camp out there. There was also a lot of people. There was the Polish National Alliance had a campground out there. I don't know if they still do. It was called the PNA.
Okay.
And that was where you could go swimming for a quarter. As a kid, it was fun because you'd go swimming and there'd be old Polish ladies swimming in their bras.
Come for the swimming, stay for the show.
Yeah, exactly. but it was definitely more rural when I was a kid. You know, I mean, I think we had 3 stoplights, and now now there's big box stores where there used to be bean fields.
Right, right. That's how I remember it when we used to go out there for camperies or whatever it was that we called it back then.
It's a really beautiful area. Yeah. There's a fair amount of woods left, and there's a few rivers that cut through. The Fox River is really pretty.
Right, right. So what was it that took you then from Yorkville to Improv Olympic and the Annoyance Theater and kind of the comedy scene in Chicago?
Oh, just being a combination of antsiness and being a smart aleck. I come from funny people. And so it was, I liked making people laugh, and my dad's one of the funniest people I've ever known. And I had an aunt, my mom's sister, Pat, was, she could have been, if she had, you know, she could have gone to Second City and we all would have known her name if she was that funny.
Yeah.
But I just, I started out at U of I, and then I kind of, you come from a small town, you don't think I'm going to be in show business. But as I went through college, I just started to feel like, no, I really think I can, I want to try and make a living at this, whether it's behind the camera or in front of it.
Yeah.
And I transferred to Columbia College to film school. And that's where I started getting on film sets, which is kind of what I still do for a living. And then I had a friend that was taking classes at Improv Olympic. I actually had looked up Second City in the white pages and called to inquire about classes.
but it seemed too complicated. There were like, I don't know, like five levels to get to before you got on stage.
Yeah.
But Improv Olympic, it was a lot, it was a looser organization. You could get right on stage.
Yeah.
And so I started learning improv, which was perfect for me and my attention deficit because it was acting and writing all at once. And I didn't get a chance to double think it, you know, to overthink it. And it's great preparation. If, you know, if you can do, get on stage with a group of people and do 90 minutes of comedy five nights a week without thinking about it ahead of time, you can pretty much do anything.
Yeah. Is this where you made connection with Conan? I mean, he famously, you know, also worked in Chicago with Jeff Garland and Robert Smigel. And, you know, there's a whole bunch that sort of cut their teeth here in Chicago.
Yeah. No, that was actually, that was kind of coincidental in that Conan, you know, Conan was from Massachusetts. He was on the Harvard Lampoon, and then he was in L.A., but then he got a job on SNL, and that's where he met Robert Smigel. And then there was a writer's strike, and they all went to Chicago, I think at the behest of Bob Odenkirk. I think it was Bob was the one who said, let's all go to Chicago, rent an apartment, and do they did a live sort of sketch show. I think it was called the Happy, Happy, Good Show.
Yeah.
And they did that together, and that's, and then from that point, and then I knew Robert from a friend of mine, Betty Cahill, that was on SNL for a season or two, and I had met Robert, and we hit it off, and then when Conan got the job, Robert was his head writer, and Conan and I figured out years later that we had actually been to a party at Bob Odenkirk's house a couple of weeks before we quote-unquote met, where there was only about 15 people there, but we just didn't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, like we just, you know, we didn't know each other. We didn't talk to each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, we met in conjunction. Robert recommended me. Jeff Garland put in a lot of good words for me because he was roommates with those guys when they were doing the show in Chicago.
Right.
Jeff's originally, you know, got his start in Chicago.
Yep.
And it just kind of went from there. I mean, you know, it's like, whenever anybody starts a new comedy show, they ask around, you know, do you know anybody who needs a job who's funny?
Yeah, who do you like? Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Because it is, you know, it is sort of, you're going to be spending a lot of time with these people. So you better like them. That's maybe as important as whether or not they're that funny.
Yeah. I listen to Conan's podcast all the time. It kind of gives me my Conan fix of ridiculousness. I enjoy it.
But I think he's funnier than he's ever been. I mean, I just think that, like, that's him in his purest form. He doesn't have to worry about throwing a commercial, and he doesn't have to worry about, you know, he just can be his 1,000 RPM self.
But you're also in the podcast, the world now as well, with Three Questions, right? With Three Questions with Andy Richter.
That's right. I've been doing it for a few years. It's more of a kind of a one-on-one interview. It's meant to be, you know, it's emphasis on comedy, but it's called the Three Questions, and the three questions are, where do you come from, where are you going, and what have you learned? And it's just kind of, I like conversations where people think about why they are the way they are and what they're going to do about it, you know, what they like and what they don't like and where they're going forward. And it's been really, I've had amazing guests on it, and that I'm actually just starting, I think maybe my fourth or fifth year. I can't remember, you know,
great.
It all kind of blends together, but, and I'm also trying, I'm going to be having a new podcast too, that I think is going to be, it's going to be a call-in radio show, on Sirius XM. I mean, I'm still talking about it. I don't know for sure, but that would be really fun.
And
it would be under the Team Coco auspices, because SiriusXM purchased the company, so Conan's got his own channel over there on SiriusXM.
Right.
Not to talk about satellite radio, and you know,
that's where I listen to Conan's show. That's where I hear it, it's great that there's a whole new world of people listening to things again.
Yeah,
you've been in.
Yeah, I think the pandemic really changed things
for
people who thought, like, Oh, I could never. I would never host a little chat show. And now they're like, "Yeah, that looks like fun."
Yeah,
so they do.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a very interesting time. The whole business is evolving and changing right now. For now, everything is focused on this coming Thursday night at the Tivoli Theater for Comedy for Cancer, a benefit. Featuring Andy Richter and Mike Toomey, Annabella Val, and so many others, Thursday night at the Tivoli in Downers Grove. You can get more info and tickets at hfoundation.org. Andy, you will learn as a call-in talk show host that when time is up, time is up.
I know.
That's where we are right now. It's so great to talk to you. Looking forward to seeing you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Andy Richter, lovely visit from him. Thank you for being with us. Appreciate it. And who else are we? Oh, the if you missed our Week in Theater segment today, we had the four cast members of the new production of Jersey Boys that will be opening mid-March at the Mercury Theater in Chicago. And they did the Four Seasons song, Sherry. That was amazing. You've got to hear that live. We'll post that up on the web a little bit later on today. But we've got more still to come for you, including our Food Time segment in a few minutes, which will feature author Maria Liberati, who is the author of The Basic Art of Italian Cooking, which I'm always happy to talk about. But she's got some special tips for Lenten entrees, foods without meat that you can enjoy during the Lenten season. So we're going to look forward to that. We did a segment this past Wednesday on our TV morning news. I was so looking forward to doing this segment where I made pad thai. I explained, you know, you can do this for Lent, just don't put any meat in it. You can put tofu in it, or you can put nothing in it except the vegetables, and it's still delicious, you know, traditional pad thai. And I made it a couple of times at home. I test things out at home before I do them on TV, and it worked out great, and it was delicious, if I do say so myself. And then it came time to do it on TV, and the stove wasn't working properly, and the segment time when I normally do this, they moved it up by about 7 minutes. Something happened, and they had to move my segment up by about 7 minutes. And, you know, the food wasn't really quite done cooking yet. So it was just an absolute disaster on the air. Kind of funny to when things go wrong, it's kind of funny on TV. The recipe, I put the recipe online. I did not put the disastrous video online. Nobody, especially me, wants to revisit that again. And actually, somebody texted in this morning, Dean, please release the video. They want to watch it again. It's not going to happen. You're never going to see that video again as long as you live. But I did put the recipe, so if you want to make the pad thai, please do, because it is so delicious. And you can make it with, you can make it with chicken. I've made it with shrimp. It's really great. You can put tofu in it if you want to, you know, make it for Lent. You can not put any protein in it at all. You sprinkle nuts in at the end, so there is some amount of protein in it after all. But you can do it without any meat or seafood or anything like that, and it's still delicious. So check that out. Now listen to what I'm doing next week, what I've got planned for you on my cooking segment this coming Wednesday, and hopefully everything will work out. I like to see some of these, you know, TV cooks do things live. You know, mostly all these cooking shows that you see, everything's taped, and they can redo it again. They can stop. They can do it over again. Mine is 100% completely live. Whatever happens, happens. And we've only had a couple of meltdowns, I would say in like the
3+ years that we've been doing this cooking segment, it's only happened maybe 2 or 3 times where it's been absolute, complete, utter disaster. Most of the time, things work perfectly, but now I'm a little shell shocked after last week. But I've got a fantastic seafood dish that I can't wait to show you. I made it at home the other day. I was thinking about it. I had seen a recipe for stuffed salmon that looked okay. But I thought, how can I? I just want to customize it a little bit. And I have made the Greek spanakopita many, 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 many times. It's spinach and feta cheese and onions or scallions or leeks, you know, a little bit of an onion taste to it. But it's mostly spinach and feta. Made it many times. Normally it's made with phyllo dough, that very thin, wafer-like breading, I guess you might call it. That's how it's normally served. But I thought, what if I took the spinach and feta filling and I put that in a salmon fillet? So what I did was I took a salmon fillet, put it on its side, and you know the thick part of the salmon fillet? I cut a little pouch open into that and put the spinach and feta filling inside the salmon fillet, and then laid it back down, you know, flat again, skin side down, salt, pepper. I put a little paprika on it, and then I put it back up on its side again, so the filling side was up, and put it into an oven. I want to say like 360 degrees, I think, is where I put it in the oven for like 15 minutes, something like that. And the salmon cooked perfectly. I always check with seafood. I always check with my instant read thermometer because, you know, safety first. And I checked it, and it was about 150 degrees, which for me, I don't like fish that's a little medium rare. I like it medium to medium well. I like my seafood cooked. The spinach and feta stuffing that I put into it melted a little bit, and the salmon was cooked perfectly and tasted delicious. Oh my gosh, this was so good and so easy to make. It's super, super, super easy. And I thought, this is a perfect dish for Lent. So this coming Wednesday, I'm going to make the spinach and feta stuffed salmon fillets on television, and I'll show you how easy and delicious it all is. And cross your fingers and toes that all the equipment works and that they don't tell me to go on 10 minutes before I was expecting to go on, because every minute counts when you're doing a live cooking segment. Anyway, so that's going to be coming up. But we're going to today, back to my original thought on this, we are going to be talking with Maria Liberati, who is a well-known cookbook author, mostly Italian cooking, but she's got some great ideas for some Lenten recipes that she's going to share with us as well. So we'll get to all of that and much more, all coming right up. Tomorrow morning, talking with Ziggy Marley, son of the legendary Bob Marley and producer of the new movie Bob Marley One Love, which will be the number one movie of the weekend once again. Ziggy Marley and the star of the movie who plays Bob Marley talking to me tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. Looking forward to that. You know what I didn't get to, because we had some super special guests on our weekend theater segment today, the stars of the new production of Jersey Boys that'll be opening at the Mercury Theater. And they were amazing, by the way. They sang for us live. Please go to check out when we post this on the web a little bit later on this afternoon. Please go check out their performance. They were so great. The show itself at the Mercury Theater will be opening on March 15th. In previews, and then on the 28th,
for actual performances. It'll be here until about Memorial Day for now. I'm already predicting that this show is going to be extended because it sounds like it's going to be one that people just absolutely love. But anyway, we talked to those guys, and they performed for us. So I didn't get to my review for Billy Elliot, the musical. I went out there last Sunday after we got finished with Tom Skilling here. And again, thank you, Tom, for coming and spending 2 hours with us in studio last week. We had so much positive reaction to it. You know, Tom was amazing and very generous with his time, and I can't even express how appreciative I was that he, you know, said yes when I invited him to come and be with us. This coming Wednesday, by the way, the 28th, is going to be Tom's final night on the air, so make sure that you watch that. And after 45 years, believe it or not, Tom Skilling retiring from WGN TV this coming Wednesday night. So make sure you're watching for that. It's going to be amazing. But anyway, we got done with Tom. We went out after the show and had a little lunch, and the laughs and all the memories continued. And then I went out to the Paramount in Aurora and caught their latest production, Billy Elliot. Now, this is an amazing show. It's the music is written by Elton John, so you've got that. But it's a story about staying true to yourself, following your own dreams, doing what it is that makes you happy. It's a story about a young boy whose mother passes away. He's being raised by his blue-collar father, who is a coal miner in a small town in England. His older brother also is a coal miner, and the coal miners go out on strike. And there is a turmoil in this small English village. The father, trying to keep things normal for his little son, Billy Elliot, he sends him to learn boxing, but Billy has no interest whatsoever in boxing, but sees a ballet class that's going on at the same time, and pokes his head in and becomes interested and learns that he's got some amazing natural ability as a ballet dancer and wants to pursue it and wants to, you know, is encouraged to go to the Royal Ballet School in London. And his father doesn't want his, you know, this blue-collar father doesn't want any part of his son being a ballet dancer, heaven forbid. You know, so the story is about Billy being prevented from following his own dreams, and how that plays out, without, you know, giving too much away. But all this whole story being told with the most beautiful songs, the most beautiful performances, stunning, jaw-droppingly amazing performances by this cast. There are two young men who play Billy Elliot. And I only saw one of them, obviously, on Sunday night. But I was just completely in awe of the sheer talent that this young man had in the very, very intricate dance numbers that he did. And I'm told that the other young man who plays Billy Elliot is just as talented. But it's the whole cast. It's the production setting. It's the staging. It's the lighting. It's a beautiful performance. As I said when I reviewed this on television the other day, and also on Bob Surratt show the other day, I've seen Billy Elliot many times. It's a really great show. It's a very moving show. I've seen it on Broadway. I've seen it when it was here in Chicago downtown. I've seen the touring company. This production that they have put up at the Paramount is second to none. It's easily as good as anything that I've seen on bigger stages, although the Paramount stage is pretty big. But once again, the Paramount stepping up and putting on an amazing show. I cannot recommend the show Billy Elliot enough. It is absolutely spectacular. So if you're looking for something that's great, you want to take the whole family, I would imagine that kids seeing kids doing amazing things on stage
you know, usually is a big hit. It's very inspiring for kids to see other kids doing great stuff. That's what you get to see in the show. So it's running out at the Paramount Theater. If you go to ParamountAurora.com, you can get ticket info on that. So there you go. Billy Elliot, highly recommending. Now, something else that you might be interested in seeing, and this is also in Aurora, just down the street at the intimate Copley Theater there. It's just down the street, part of the Paramount complex, but it's a smaller theater, which they can do more intimate productions. They are staging A Streetcar Named Desire, a classic show. It's running out there through from March 13th until April 21st. And if you want to get tickets, you can go to ParamountAurora.com. ParamountAurora.com for A Streetcar Named Desire at the Copley Theater, the 165-seat Copley Theater, part of the Paramount Complex. We have got some free tickets to give away for the show today. And let's take callers 7, 8, and 9 and give all three of you a pair of tickets to see the show. Callers 7, 8, and 9. The phone number is 312-981-7200. Again, the Streetcar Named Desire, classic drama at the Paramount Theater's intimate 165-seat Copley Theater, running March 13th through April 21st. Want to buy tickets? I'm sure they would like that. ParamountAurora.com. But caller 7, 8, and 9 right now. Going to win some tickets at 312-981-7200. All right. So let's get some other Lenten non-meat recipes from our Food Time guest, Maria Liberati, the author of Basic Art of Italian Cooking. And she also hosts a podcast. We'll learn all about the things that she does. We'll get some cooking tips and recipes and much more, all coming up from her in just a few minutes. So stick around for all of that, and that will follow this check of WGN News. 12:35, and that means it's food time. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program, heard every Sunday at this time for many, many, many years now. And today, sponsored by the Writers Theater, the band's visit. Today, we're getting into some Italian food ideas and some meatless food ideas for the Lenten season. And a pleasure to welcome to the program today, Maria Liberati, the author of The Basic Art of Italian Cooking, Holidays and Special Occasions. Maria is an award-winning chef. She is host of the Maria Liberati Show, a podcast which can be found on Apple Podcast. Maria, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Dean. It's really an honor to be on your show. Thanks so much for having me.
So this is something, I'm guessing, with a name like Liberati, that something that you grew up with, all this wonderful Italian food, right?
You got it. Yes, I grew up with, like, you know, just what you're imagining, big scenes of big families, big family cooking together on Sundays and holidays, and really, you know, lots of big family get-togethers just cooking together. Yes.
Yeah. Would you say that you began to learn about all of this from, you know, your parents, from you know, grandparents, from aunts and uncles and all that sort of thing, which is so common?
Yes. Actually, I look back on this as saying, yes, it's probably started when I was really like 4 years old. My grandfather, who was from Italy, used to take me shopping in the Italian market in South Philadelphia. with him on Sundays. I used to go with him, and you know, they would give us a taste of the fruits that he would pick out. You know, before you bought stuff, they used to give you a taste of different things, and he would let me taste things, and I can still remember like a little bit. So yes, it would go back, starting with my grandparents and aunts, uncles, and all of that here in the U.S. And then when I had the pleasure of living and studying in Italy.
Wow, that's amazing, and it's just taking me back, because when I was a little kid, I don't think I was four, I might have been 8 or 10 or something, I would get on the bus here in Chicago. We lived on the south side of Chicago. We would take the bus all the way to the north side, to the Greektown section, and my grandmother would meet up with her lady friends. And they would sit around and, you know, speak in Greek, and I had no idea what they were saying. I would sit. She had already warned me that I'd better behave or else. So I sat there like the angel that I am, and listened. And then we would go to the Greek market, and you know, she would purchase things and buy things and explain things to me of what we were going to do. And then I'd go back to her house, and she would begin to make a beautiful Sunday dinner out of the things that we purchase. So I think it's a very common thing, don't you think, for ethnic families to have had that kind of history?
It is definitely. It is a very common thing for certain ethnic families. It is. But the thing that I was so amazed with, I guess because I grew up like you did with that, just assumed that everybody, you know, it was kind of the same thing. But as I started doing like cooking programs and appearances for my books and stuff, you know, people that I was talking to, people that did not have that experience and they weren't as fortunate. So my whole goal in doing my book was to try to show people, hey, you can create something like this, you know, yourself at home, and create a memorable experience with food, because I have so many. And that was one of my goals with my books also, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, I always, when I go to an Italian restaurant, I'm always blown away when I find, you know, one that I would swear that somebody's nonna is in the kitchen cooking. Somebody's grandmother is cooking in the kitchen. That's how delicious and homemade that the food tastes there. There's a restaurant here that's called Pasta de Arte. Pasta de Arte, and it is old school. It is delicious.
Wonderful.
And I think that's the kind of the essence of what you bring out in your cookbooks, don't you think? Is there a certain style that you think you specialize in?
Yes, that is actually it. That's, I think, when, you know, living in Italy, I also found the restaurants that were just like you said, the restaurants that were operated by the families, you know, that still cooked a lot of the traditional dishes, sometimes with a twist, but still the traditional things. They are the restaurants that were the most delicious. And yes, definitely, I try to create that with my cookbooks. Definitely try to create that experience of the home cooked, you know, more of the home cooked feel of food. Yes.
Now, you know, with the Easter is right around the corner, you know, we're in the Lenten season right now. And I want to talk about, you know, foods to cook during Lent, you know, meatless recipes in a minute or two. But, you know, just for somebody's Sunday dinner today, what would be a great Maria Liberati style basic art of Italian cooking Sunday dinner that they could easily put together for today?
Yes, well, risotto is one of my favorite dishes. It does not use a lot of ingredients. I know a lot of people get kind of anxiety attacks when you say risotto. They're like, oh no, because they think it's so difficult, but it's really an easy dish to do. So it's one of my favorite dishes. In fact, I just did this for my family last weekend, family dinner, risotto with asparagus and mushrooms. Mm. And it was just really, really good. The key to risotto is you really should use carnivoli rice. Arborio is good, but carnivoli is just like, it just gives it a much creamier texture. So, you know, risotto is really, there's really not a lot of ingredients. And the only thing that takes time is just the stirring, you know, of the risotto. But it's about an 18-minute thing. And the fun thing is you can get family involved, you know, make it a family event. Have everybody take turns stirring and adding in the ingredients. So if I was going to do kind of, because I'm feeling a little bit springy here on the, I'm in the Northeast, so asparagus and mushroom risotto would be a great dish, I think, for Sunday dinner today.
Yeah, we have a perfect day today. It's a beautiful, you would think it's springtime already. You wouldn't think that it's February here, especially in Chicago. But
oh wow!
And the asparagus, I did my shopping yesterday. The asparagus just look beautiful in the stores. And, you know, and the mushrooms. So, you know, that sounds like a perfect, but there's all kinds of different variations, isn't there, for risotto?
Asparagus and mushroom is great.
What else? What else could you put?
Yeah, so if you don't like mushrooms, peas are a great spring addition. You know, the smaller peas. Just rice with peas is a great dish. Also, you can do risotto with peas. That's actually a famous dish known as ZCABC. ZC for rice, BC is for peas. And just the risotto with peas is absolutely delicious as well. And if you don't like any vegetables, you can always do just risotto, maybe add a little touch of saffron at the end of cooking. But you can really combine risotto with almost any vegetable that you like. One of my favorite things to do with risotto is before I add my broth in as a liquid, I use either a sparkling dry white wine or a dry white wine, about a cup of that. I just, you know, I toast the rice first and then I add that in. Of course, the alcohol burns off, but you're left with that flavor of the wine, just adds a nice touch.
Yeah, does the sparkling wine add something as opposed to, you know, a flat wine?
Not that I know. The only reason I would use, like, say, a Prosecco or even a champagne or any kind of sparkling white wine is a lot of times, I tell people, use the same wine to serve your dish with that you're cooking with.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to serve a Prosecco, use that. You can use that in a dish. It kind of gives it a festive feel. So if you just want a festive feel. But no, I really can't say any difference between. It's just your preference in wines. As long as it's a drier, you know, a drier white wine, yeah, it works out really well.
Brightens up the recipe a little bit. In addition to the rice, of course, and the vegetables, what else are you putting in there? You're putting in a chicken broth, I assume?
Well, you can use, if you want to make it vegetarian, you can use vegetable broth.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, if you don't, you can use chicken broth. Exactly. Be careful. I just want people to know, like, be careful if you buy broth, make sure it's a good broth, because some of that canned stuff, I know it's quicker, but you know, you just want to make sure of the broth that that you're getting, or if you have the time to make your own, there's nothing like, you know, homemade broth to add in the risotto. So, yes, you're adding a broth, extra virgin cold-pressed olive oil, and you can use onions. If you don't like that really, like, hard oniony taste, you can use scallions or leeks instead.
Yeah.
And, That's really, and then of course to top it, Parmigiano Reggiano. If you have truffles, you can shave a little truffles on top, which is actually what I did on this risotto. It adds such a really a great touch to them. So just a little bit of truffle. You know, you don't want to overdo with a truffle, but just a little grate of truffle. Or if you have truffle oil, just use a little drizzle of truffle oil to get a little bit of that flavor. But that's really all of the ingredients that you need.
That's how simple it is, really. It's a really quite a bit. I'm all about simple, easy, but it's got to be delicious at the end of the day. And that certainly would be. I made a, talking about simple, I made what would seem to be a simple marinara sauce with garlic and onions and tomatoes. And then, you know, once I let that go at a low simmer for a while, I took some fresh cod and laid it into the sauce. And basically poached the cod. It holds together and took on the deliciousness of this fresh marinara sauce. I mean, you can do it from the jar if you want to, but it's so easy to make from scratch, and it makes such a big difference in the taste.
Yes. Well, you know, that's called in Italy, we call that aquapazza crazy water. Did you ever hear of aquapazza crazy water?
I never
water?
Have.
Yes.
I never thought.
Crazy water. There you go. And that's how you make fish in that seafood. That is my favorite way to make seafood. Yes, you just some extra virgin olive oil. You could use some garlic if you want.
Exactly.
And some great tomatoes. And then you simmer the seafood in that, and it comes out really moist and flavorful. If you like, you can even slice some potatoes just a little bit and put it in there as well. And it's so delicious. But yes, that's aquapazza, crazy water.
I'll be darned. Yeah, I made a little linguine on the side, and I put the linguine at the base of linguine down carefully. Now, the, you know, cod, if you're not careful, it's going to fall apart. So carefully, I took it out and then put some of that delicious sauce around on top of the pasta. And it's
exactly
so easy.
Great.
It's so easy. Let's get
it
some
is.
More. I'm gonna take a break real quick, and we'll get some more recipes from you. Maria Liberati is with us, the basic art of Italian cooking, right after this. 12:53, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on our Food Time show with Maria Liberati, the author of The Basic Art of Italian Cooking. You can get some Lenten recipe suggestions. Maria, our listeners are getting into it on our text line here. I've got the 815 area code saying, I'm making risotto with spinach tonight. I'm going Greek style with a light lemon flavor. Does Maria have a good risotto recipe with some spinach ideas?
Well, okay, so that sounds interesting with lemon, especially to make it really springy. So for spinach, I would suggest, so you want to, you know, stir fry the spinach with extra virgin olive oil and garlic. And you want to then add that into the risotto because you don't want to cook it for the 18 minutes. But if you can do the fresh spinach, you know, I'm not sure if anyone, well, you can find fresh spinach
absolutely.
But yes, you can. Yes. I was just thinking of my garden, but yes, you can find it in a lot of places. So fresh spinach is, there's nothing like it. So if you want to, yes, stir fry the fresh spinach with a little bit of garlic, you can do that, and then I would suggest maybe just drizzling the lemon over the dish when it's done, and, you know, a little bit of Parmigiano Reggiano. But if you're doing it Greek style, Parmigiano Reggiano would probably be good. But, yeah, spinach would be great, and spinach is great in risotto, definitely.
How about this? I'm sure you've had the Greek spanakopita, which is...
Oh, yes, that's delicious.
Spinach and feta with leeks.
And feta.
You know, how about the spinach and garlic, as you say? and the leeks to give it a little mild onion flavoring, and maybe sprinkle with a little feta cheese on top. And it's sort of
yes, I was almost going to say exactly. That would be a great variation. So yeah, usually when you before you do the rice, before you toast the rice, you're going to saute the leeks. And in the extra virgin olive oil, then you're going to add in, you know, you could add in, you know, the rice. And yes, if you're doing spinach with, and then top it with feta cheese, that definitely gives it a great sort of a Greek touch.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't, as Maria says, though, I wouldn't put that spinach in too soon. Because really, when you put it in the hot rice, it's going to cook instantly. And I like my spinach a little al dente, if you will. You know what I mean?
I do, too, because then it loses all its flavor. Not only the say flavor, but vitamins, minerals, but the flavor is lost.
Right.
So exactly. You want to put it in at almost the very end of the cooking. Yes.
How about a quick Lenten recipe? What would you suggest?
Well, it's quick to say, but I'm not sure if it's quick to do, but lasagna, it's great. You can do lasagna, just with cheeses, you know, lasagna, layer it with mozzarella sauce.
Yeah.
Something that we did in where my family's from in Abruzzo, Italy, and when they wanted to replace meat, they would actually slice hard-boiled eggs and put it in between the layers and it is surprisingly delicious. So that's a great dish. If you want to make homemade pasta, of course, it takes a little bit longer. Of course, you can buy it, but you can also buy the pasta to make lasagna. So that's really easy. But pasta dishes are really, really simple to do. You can do a lentil bolognese sauce. So no meat, use the lentils instead of the meat. And it's just pretty much, you know, a sauce with extra virgin olive oil and garlic and onions, and then your tomatoes, and then you're going to have the lentils that have been cooked. Obviously, you're going to put that in the sauce, and you can use that. You've got protein. You can use that as a topper for your pasta. So that's really good. You can do a lot of things with mushrooms and cauliflower. Yeah. You can do different meatless things with cauliflower.
Yeah, lots of really good ideas. You can get cooking tips and recipes and much more about Maria and her cookbook series, The Basic Art of Italian Cooking, at marialiberati.com. Look for her podcast, The Maria Liberati Show, on Apple Podcasts. And I can't thank you enough for joining us today, Maria. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Yes, definitely. Thanks so much, Dean. Thanks for having me.